a sexting scandal at the State House. Can Justin Moed weather the storm? VA controversy, how the humor in a holiday email is lost on lawmakers. A new state GOP chairman is on the way. Dan Coats and the waste of the week, and a Twitter storm aimed at the State Board of Ed. That plus the Colts in free agency and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 13, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, State Representative Justin Moed, an Indianapolis Democrat, apologized for sexting with the same woman from southern Indiana who was involved in a scandal surrounding New York politician Anthony Weiner. He was identified by Sidney Leathers, the college student turned porn star, who first told the New York Post that she traded text messages with a lawmaker from the Midwest. This week, she shared more with TheDirty.com. The website published photos that it says were sent by Justin Moed to Leathers, photos that show him mostly naked. Apparently, Moed thought he was doing so anonymously. He used an alias, but when he sent Leathers gifts from an Amazon account, the message said, "A gift from Justin Moed." Is Justin Moed's career in jeopardy? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, will Justin Moed be able to keep his seat in the General Assembly?
It's difficult to say. I mean, this is a, you know, as he said, I think this is a private matter. But how many times have we told the story about political leaders not learning that there's nothing private about using the internet for this kind of activity? This lesson continues to be lost on a lot of people, and this is another example of that. But the problem he's got now, not only the personal embarrassment to his family and family of his fiance and her family and everybody else in the process, is how his colleagues will look at him and how effective he can be in that position, whether they can trust him, whether they think he's a man of integrity, whether he's good for his word, whether he's really what he appears to be. Those are issues that if they're starting to dog you, it's going to be difficult for him to be effective. And at that point, then the voters have to decide if he stays around long enough, if he doesn't feel enough pressure to leave before then, the voters will have to decide whether he should be in that office or not.
Well, the voters won't get an opportunity to make that decision until 2016.
Yep.
In the meantime, this involves personal behavior. It's not subject to any of the ethics provisions.
Right. Involves no state resources is nothing. I mean, it's certainly sordid, but it's not illegal. And so those are important distinctions to make. It's still a huge embarrassment. He has to get back to work. He has to get back to the State House. He has to put this all behind him. And he has to go to work and do what he's elected to do.
Can he put it behind him? I don't know.
You know, that's the question. He's apologized, and he's owned up to what he's done, which are two good steps in the right direction. It's going to be difficult for him to do that, but he has to do that if he's going to claim that seat for the next 2 years. And then we'll see. I think it would be unlikely that he would have that seat unopposed again. And the question is, it's, as Mike says, it's up to the voters in his district then as to whether the good that he does outweighs the bad.
This calls his judgment into question.
Yeah, I think that's the real crux here, because as Ann mentioned, there was apparently no illegal activity or unusual or untoward use of resources, those kinds of things. So that's the real question that has to be answered. I think both Ann and Mike have have given you good opinions about what may happen with that. But I do think that's an important distinction. He made a poor set of choices. How he rebounds from that will tell everything. But he has a chance to do that because he didn't commit any crimes. He didn't use state resources. And so he's really going to have to work overtime to win over his colleagues again and to regain the trust that Mike talked about.
This has gotten wide treatment in the local media. It's been reported on by two newspapers in Washington, two in New York, at least one national television program. Yet there are a lot of people who are saying that, that this shouldn't be news because it's personal behavior. What do you make of that?
Well, the fact that there was nothing illegal, as has been said here, is an important distinction. However, the judgment question and the perception question, those are hard to work around because you talked about Anthony Weiner. At least the first time around that he was in this situation, he could say, plead ignorance. You know, I didn't, when I was in the kitchen, that pot on the stove was really, really hot. I didn't know it, and I touched it, and I got burned. Well, in this case, that pot, not only has it already been heated, but it's got warning signs saying, this is really hot, stay away, stay away. And you still go up and touch it. That is a real hard thing to overcome, it seems to me.
So you say it's up to his constituents, up to the voters, but should party leaders apply pressure in this
case?
Well,
that's what I'm talking about when I talk about his colleagues and whether or not they feel like he's got enough integrity that they want to keep working with him. You know, they could be behind the scenes, try to push him out of the way and try to convince him that it's not good for him to stay there so they can make other arrangements to try to get somebody else in that seat. And I'm sure there's going to be some of that going on. But the problem you got is that we don't know if the whole story is over yet. I mean, you're dealing with a person on the other end of this who thrives on this kind of publicity. And as long as she's involved in this, who knows where this might go. And so subsequently, the story goes on longer and longer and longer. As long as she's getting publicity, she likes it and is ahead of the game.
Yeah, but there has to be at least some journalistic integrity. I think we've seen what there is in terms of putting out the salacious pictures again. I would hope the media would not continue. I mean, we know the story.
Yeah.
We don't need to keep repeating
it. Well, she'll probably keep it alive. That's what I'm saying.
She may be, but it doesn't get anywhere unless the media reports
it. She's in cahoots with at least one website, and there's no desire for restraint there.
Right.
Hey, I'm not sure it's necessarily a media issue. What he needs to worry...
You always defend the First
Amendment. No, listen,
you always defend it,
I do. I actually kind of like the First Amendment, and I'll stick with that. But what he has to deal with here is future opponents, whether they're on the other side of the aisle
or
any special interest group that takes offense at a position he has taken, they could stir the pot. I mean, it's not just as if the media single-handedly are the only ones
that have leverage.
He's not
been hypocritical about any of these issues. I mean, that was part of the problem.
There are issues
that's true, Ann, but look at one of the stories that came out after his story broke was the 11 other people who in recent years have been found themselves in some kind of sex scandal. So he's going to have to keep dealing with this on and on and on. I mean, it's just not going to end.
Until the next sex scandal occurs, which, who knows? It could be next week.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, when should a public official's private life become public? Your choices are A, never, B, only when he or she breaks the law, or C, when it appears on the internet. Last week's question, should Indiana move to the central time zone? 88% said yes, 9% said no. 3% said, this issue makes me tired. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Joe Donnelly said this week that the suspension of a health clinic manager at the Rodebush VA Medical Center is the right thing to do. He stopped short of calling for Robin Paul to be fired, however, saying all of the facts need to be gathered first. Paul is on administrative leave following the disclosure that she sent emails to other VA employees that appear to mock the mental health issues faced by veterans. One of the holiday season messages included the picture of an elf hanging from an electrical cord. It upset Senator Donnelly.
I have no understanding of why they've waited so long to jump on this, to deal with it. Apparently they knew 2 months ago or even further back. I was appalled by the email. I thought it was disgraceful, and I wish that the VA had dealt with it sooner and had been upfront with it sooner.
And Delaney, can Robin Paul keep her job?
I guess that's the big question. I mean, Senator Donnelly's been very good on veterans issues and very concerned with suicide of veterans and, in fact, internment of or a burial of veterans who committed suicide after their tenure in the military. He's been very good on that, and one of his big concerns is that there be enough mental health people to take care of these
victims. And that veterans feel welcome when they come into the system.
Absolutely, but also that there be enough and that they're paid enough that they can attract and retain the best mental health counselors. And, you know, that's part of a larger picture here, and I'm glad he's focusing on this. This was an extremely unfortunate incident, and whatever happens to that particular employee, the big problem still remains that these veterans need treatment.
Yeah, it sounds like the VA didn't handle this very well.
No, I don't think they did. This story absolutely sickens me. I think that having a person with that kind of judgment in charge of a program that's going to take care of the heroes that are coming back from putting their lives on the line for our country is appalling. And I think anybody with that kind of bad judgment should be removed from that position. It's really tragic. The suicide rate is so alarmingly high for people coming back from war.
That's right.
And to have somebody with that lack of sensitivity that's supposedly heading up that program doesn't fit. She's got to go.
Why do you have any idea why the VA is defending her, which it appears they are?
Other than, I guess you could, I don't know the answer to your question. I suppose if, in fact, there's such a shortage of qualified personnel, which is, as Ann mentioned, one of the bills that Senator Donnelly put forth just this week deals with looking for physician assistants who could be put into roles where they can help prescribe medications and so forth and assume more of the traditional role of physician. So maybe there's a shortage. Maybe it's a circling of the wagons that, the willingness to dismiss this is just, bad humor. But I agree. I mean, the subplot of, secondary theme of the title of today's show is just people doing stupid things. Another case, as was the first question, where there was not anything illegal. And we've all done things of bad taste, probably more in my case than most.
We would stipulate
that. We'll stipulate that. But this, I mean, there's just, as Mike says, there's things you just...
Beyond the pale.
Don't. Yeah. This is one of those.
Beyond the pale.
It's just hard to describe.
Look, I saw some statistics today. Mike mentioned the suicide rate. For the first 9 months of 2014, well more than 300 service members had committed suicide. We're at a rate of well over one per day. That is unacceptable. The underlying problem are the ones that the Senator Donnelly and others are trying to address, and that is to make sure that there is money and expertise available so we can drive that rate down. But the trust issue has to be there, and this breaks trust with people who need service. And you cannot abide that at all.
It's important, I think, to realize that I don't even think the fact that she was on administrative leave happened or became public, at least, until after Senator Donnelly pushed in that regard.
And Jackie Walorski and some others.
There is a long way to go for the VA, and this shows that.
Yeah.
Moving on, Tim Berry is stepping down as state GOP chairman. Berry, a substitute panelist on this show occasionally, has served in the top party position since 2013 after being elected both state auditor and state treasurer. The governor's choice to replace him is Mike Pence aide Jeff Cardwell. John Ketzenberger, what's behind that transition?
Well, the half-life, as these folks can tell you, of a chairman is pretty short. There are a lot of demands, and it's a very, very difficult job. So, probably an opportunity for Tim Berry. And clearly the governor wants to have somebody else in that spot, too. And Jeff Cardwell is a trusted advisor, somebody who has held positions in the governor's administration. So that's not unusual. He wants somebody who's lines up with him, and I think that's Jeff Cardwell.
Well, and under the heading of trusted advisor, proximity is access, is influence in government often, and Jeff Cardwell has the office next door to the governor's office. A lot of people think this is him laying the foundation for a run for re-election. Is that fair speculation?
I think that's I can understand why that would be fuel that speculation. I think there's probably something to that. The only thing that seems somewhat odd to me is we talk, and it's exactly right, that the head of the party, whether that's a governor or someone in another role, does typically have the prerogative of lining people up. But this was not an inherited chair. I mean, it's not as if he had inherited Tim Berry from somebody else. He had picked him the first time around.
Yep.
So that's the one thing that strikes me. I wish Tim the best. He's always been, you know, an addition. He's no Mike McDaniel, don't get me wrong. But he always does a nice job on the show, well, and I wish him well.
This took party members by surprise.
A lot of people were surprised. I talked with Tim about this. First of all, I'm going to say that Tim's done a great job as chairman. He presided over one of the most successful elections for party chairman that we've ever had in 2014.
Hard to complain with the results.
When you have super majorities and you're able to bump those numbers up with those super majorities, when all the statewides and re-elect a whole congressional delegation, you can't name that anything other than a success. But Tim told me that he has had some inquiries from people out in the private sector, and I think he decided, for one, that if you're going to make the change, you better do it now before you get into the two-year reelection cycle for the campaign, because once you're there through another 2.5 years. So, and Jeff Cardwell's, like you said, a trusted advisor, good guy, former city councilman here in Indianapolis, successful businessman on the South Side, and he'll be a good chairman.
You think this is a sign that Mike Pence is not running for president?
I never thought Mike Pence was running for president, so I don't think this is a sign of that. But I think Tim Berry's done a very good job as chairman, and as I think we opined once before, last time I looked at this, the average shelf life for a state chairman was about 18 months. So he's right on target for that, so it's not surprising from that point of view at all. It's a thankless job.
I think he's been there 20.
Okay, it's a thankless job, and it takes you all over the state to more chicken dinners than you can shake a fist at. And God, I'm glad for him that he's got some other opportunities.
Dan Coats has a higher profile on Capitol Hill this year, and one of the things that the Republican senator is doing to get noticed is something he calls waste of the week. In each of the last 3 weeks, the Republican Coats has gone on the Senate floor to point out an example of federal spending that he thinks is unnecessary. This week, he complained about a study at Ohio State University where a $387,000 grant was used in a study authorized by the National Institutes of Health.
Does NIH need to fund a study to determine the benefits of massage by using 18 white rabbits from New Zealand that receive 30-minute massages 4 times a day to prove out the fact that a massage helps get rid of some of those aches and pains that come from strenuous exercise?
John Schwanes, Senator Coates says he will decide by April 5th if he is running for re-election in 2016. Is waste of the week an indicator of what he'll do?
A lot in that question, Jim. I'm still just thinking about those little rabbits. I would have done it for free. I would have volunteered.
Well, he suggested maybe the football team could have served as a...
but killed the rabbits when
that's
they were
That's what dying. I understand. So. Rabbit died. So that's...
For the Ohio State football team?
So he's a PETA activist is basically what this has become. You know, normally when somebody takes on, starts an initiative such as this, there's whether it's sort of harks back to William Proxmire with the Golden Fleece Award, or Tom Coburn used to do that. Senator from Oklahoma had a whole book he put out annually on waste. Usually when you do that, Evan Bayh did it with the Golden Fawcett Awards as a candidate. You do it to try to get her in media. So that would tell me he's at least thinking about shoring up his bona fides as a fiscal conservative, and people are having fun with this.
People are trying to read the tea leaves, look at that, and then they look at the letter that was signed by what's called the Gang of 47 in the Senate this week about Iran negotiations, and he didn't sign that, and that would lead people to believe that he's not going to run for re-election.
Right, the rationale being there, instead of doing the political thing, he did the thing that would seem to jibe with his belief system as a former ambassador and as somebody who sees, you know, as takes a moderate view of the world typically, you don't get involved in those kinds of things. So I can understand the you know, the derivation that this might mean that he's not running. Is it the definitive sign? I doubt it. But it was the right thing to do. I'm much more impressed with that than
except,
the rabbits.
And when it, the way it turned out politically, that was the smarter political move.
Well, of course it was.
Because it was the right move.
It was the right move. I mean, there are papers that are calling that letter treasonous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, if that had been done in the height of the Cold War, that's exactly what it would have been called. So he deserves a lot of credit for not signing it. But I'm with you, John. I think that by not pandering to the right wing of his party is a better indication that he's not running.
He's announced this deadline date, and it's early, is it not? Does that tell you anything?
Well, I don't think it's early because these campaigns have become, you know, two-year campaigns now.
Right.
But I was more interested in, there's a couple ways that fascinate me about the story, but one, his reason for doing this particular waste of the week, he makes the argument that, look, it's hard to get people to focus on the big picture about debt and wasting government, so I'm just going to start chipping away out of a little bit of a time to show people how silly it really is, which I think that's honest. I think that's what he's all about, trying to deal with those bigger issues, because he thought the last election the American public chose said that they wanted clarity in positions and where they're going to go. And he said he doesn't feel like his colleagues are still ready to deal with those things.
Right.
And so I think that drove it. But what was more interesting to me was the answers about re-election, where he said, well, maybe it's time for some younger people to come along. That floored me, because I thought for sure now that he's back in the majority that he was ready to rock and roll. So all of a sudden, those few words and those few comments have got the phones buzzing.
Some people dialing the phone.
They're circling like O'Hare.
Filling out their financial forms.
It's unbelievable. But I don't think he has really actually made up his mind, but I think he's struggling with it right now. And so these next couple of weeks are going to be very interesting.
All right. The Northeast Indiana Friends of Public Education called this week for a one-year pause in ISTEP accountability. It's a suggestion that was first made by State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz. The organization called for a Twitter storm using the hashtag #PauseAccountability to alert lawmakers and members of the State Board of Education to what it believes is a misuse of ISTEP scores. It encouraged followers to tweet all day Sunday and again Thursday when the State Board of Education met. Some of the tweets point out that this year's test is different from last year's, making comparisons difficult. Here's State Representative Vernon Smith.
Definitely our scores are going to go down, and since we have a flawed A through F system and we're going to tie these lower scores to that, what happens to the employment of teachers in this state?
We grade our kids every day in the classroom. We can grade our schools every year. I think that accountability is important.
And that's the governor saying that the state has the tools necessary to grade the tests fairly. And Delaney, what was the result of that Twitter storm?
Well, the result ought to be a one-year pause. I mean, it's not simply Glenda Ritz calling for a one-year pause. The federal government recommends a one-year pause when you radically change the exam the way you have.
But the State Board of Ed didn't go along with that.
Of course not, because that's a creature of the governor. We all know that. But the fact of the matter is they're radically changing the exam again, and it's going to change the scores, and there are going to be a lot more schools with Fs as a result of this. The reason the federal government says to wait is to allow the schools a year of taking the test and allow them to adjust first. But instead, we're going to spend, $155 million drafting another test rather than taking one off the shelf, because we can't do Common Core in this state.
Is a Twitter storm an effective political tool?
I don't think it had much effect in this particular case. What's interesting about this is that Glenda Ritz's own test expert announced after they made the revisions to the test, and the governor's independent expert that they brought in to look at this, both of them testified that the test is valid and should be fine going forward. It's her own person did this, and so did the
independent
person. It's
valid. I'm not saying it's not valid.
And so if it's valid, then there's no reason not to use it for evaluation.
Because
the problem is the ISTA and Glenda Ritz do not want accountability as part of the mix. And they've tried to drag their feet every step of the way.
Finally, the Indianapolis Colts this week made some huge moves in the free agent market. The biggest was the signing of former Houston Texans star Andre Johnson. He signed a 3-year, $21 million deal. Johnson says relationships helped bring him to Indy. Mike McDaniel should I start saving for Super Bowl tickets?
Yes. Jim Irsay is committed to try to bring another Super Bowl championship back to Indianapolis, and you can tell by what he did in the last week, and I'm excited about it. I hope he also gets some linemen so that Andrew Luck is not running for his life.
He still needs some help. In Vegas, they're saying the Colts have got the best chance to win the Super Bowl.
Well, that's good. You better start saving a lot. Those tickets are going to be pretty pricey.
Last week.
It's early. Yeah. It's early. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.